Now, Purdue Pharma, the drug company that manufactures the painkiller OxyContin, submitted its restructuring plan to a federal bankruptcy court this week. The plan would remove control of the company from the Sackler family and give future revenue towards opioid treatment programs and victim compensation. It would also put an end to the thousands of civil suits against Purdue for marketing OxyContin and helping fuel the opioid epidemic that's killed more than 450,000 Americans over the past 20 years. That deal still would need to be approved by states and the courts. Many have said it doesn't go far enough. Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call joined 22 other states in a statement criticizing the plan and calling for a full wind down of the company, more transparency, and higher payments for victims and treatment programs. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you lost someone to opioid drugs, or have you dealt with addiction yourself? Did painkillers play a role in that? Do you think drug companies like Purdue Pharma bear responsibility for the ongoing opioid epidemic? And do you have questions about this bankruptcy plan and where the money would go? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Charlotte Bismuth is a former assistant district attorney with the New York City Office of the Special Narcotics Prosecutor, a contributing writer for Medium, and author of the book Bad Medicine, Catching New York's Deadliest Pill Pusher. Charlotte, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me and for covering this important topic.
I know you're not a fan of this plan. Before we get to the problems you see with it, can you spell out some of the main points of this proposal from Purdue Pharma and what it would do?
Of course. So Purdue Pharma filed for bankruptcy when it was facing more than 2,600 lawsuits and knowing that it didn't have a very good chance in prevailing in those lawsuits. What we've received now is their plan for emerging from bankruptcy. What they've imagined is a company that would receive all of Purdue Pharma's assets, so-called transferred assets, and it would take a new form. The new company, which they for the moment are calling NewCo, would be run for the benefit of the public, allegedly. So it would be managed by an independent group of directors, and the profits generated from the company would fund future settlements for victims.
And part of this also involves the money that went from Purdue Pharma, this drug company that has nothing, as I understand, to do with Purdue University. Money that went from the company was transferred to the owners, the Sackler family. How does that money shake out in this proposed bankruptcy settlement?
Very good question. So the background here is that the Sacklers own Purdue Pharma and many other companies that sell products from the Purdue pipeline. Members of the Sackler family actually transferred $10 billion out of the company before they filed for bankruptcy between 2008 and 2017. Now, that money, had it been transferred with the knowledge that the company was entering into bankruptcy, would have been fraudulently transferred because that money was supposed to be kept aside for the creditors. So one of the elements of the settlement now is that the Sacklers are contributing money back into the settlement fund. So when they first filed for Chapter 11, they offered to contribute $3 billion. That offer has now been increased to just over $4 billion. But what's important here is that this still represents just a fraction of their wealth and a fraction of the amount of money that they withdrew from the company.
Can you talk about Purdue Pharma and Sackler's liability here in the first place for selling OxyContin? It was a product that was legal at the time. It still is in certain circumstances to sell. Why are they being held liable for this opioid epidemic that emerged in large part from these prescription drugs?
Absolutely. Good question. And I think it really goes to the heart of what's wrong with this deal. There were so many people, and I think we all know people who were affected by the opioid epidemic, but there were so many people who have been jailed or, you know, prosecuted for their role in trafficking OxyContin. Purdue Pharma and members of the Sackler family were operating legally to the extent that they were selling a drug that was, you know, legal to sell. However, they committed a crime in doing so. Purdue Pharma specifically pleaded guilty recently in a settlement, in a plea agreement with the U.S. Department of Justice to having falsely marketed the drug and actually bribed physicians to prescribe the medication. They were caught for this once before in 2007. Some of your listeners may remember at the time, one of the subsidiary companies pleaded guilty to misbranding the drug. So Purdue Pharma has a long history of lying to physicians and the American public about the risks of addiction that come with the drug and the risks of overdose. The Sacklers have never been held criminally liable, and one of the benefits that they're getting from this proposed Chapter 11 plan is full civil immunity, meaning that they could never be sued ever again by anyone for their role in igniting the opioid epidemic.
We're talking to Charlotte Bismuth, former assistant district attorney with the New York City Office of the Special Narcotics Prosecutor and author of the book Bad Medicine, looking at this proposed bankruptcy settlement from Purdue Pharma for their role in promoting OxyContin and fueling the opioid epidemic in the United States. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Scott is with us in Madison. Scott, hi.
Afternoon. It has come to my attention that in many of these settlements, the companies are able to write the entire cost, if not part, off of their taxes because it is considered a portion of doing business. Is that possible in this case?
Scott, interesting question. Charlotte?
Scott, that is correct, and that's a very good question. I believe that it's a travesty for them to be able to do that. I don't know specifically whether it's the case here, but I'm absolutely convinced that if it is, they will do it.
Thanks for that call.
If possible, they would do it.
Thanks for that call, Scott, at 800-642-1234. So, Charlotte, as I mentioned, some state attorneys general, among others, including ours here in Wisconsin, not willing yet to sign off on this deal. What do you think should change? What would look like a better settlement to you?
Well, for one thing, creditors are supposed to have a very complete picture of the deal that they're being proposed with before they vote. And here we don't have a complete picture of that deal. We don't know whom the Sacklers are proposing to have under their, you know, legal cloak of protection. So who will be covered by this very, very expansive legal release? And that's a very, very key question. There are also a number of reports that are alluded to in the Chapter 11 plan about now, we know about the cash transfers out of the company, but it appears that there may have been non-cash transfers of wealth from Purdue to the members of the Sackler family. And we don't know much about that yet. Those reports haven't been made public. So I would expect a lot more transparency and for the debtors, Purdue Pharma in this case, to be much more forthcoming about what they found out about the Sackler's role in the marketing of OxyContin and what we can expect to be giving them in exchange for this, you know, fraction of the profit that they made from selling the drug.
Now, we've mentioned states, also tribal governments involved here. What does this deal mean for individuals who have been affected either by addiction themselves or by the loss of a family member?
That is an excellent and complicated question in the sense that you would imagine that individuals would be represented in two ways. One, they're represented through their states or tribal entities, cities and counties, so many entities that participated in these lawsuits and are parties to the bankruptcy. Now, in that respect, what those entities will be receiving, so those states that you live in, for instance, will be receiving is money from a settlement fund, but that money has to be earmarked for what's called opioid abatement. Most of that will involve purchasing from the new Purdue company overdose reversal medications to and other medications to address opioid dependence. Now, in terms of individuals who have filed personal injury claims, of which there were many in Wisconsin, that's a much more complicated situation. They've been allocated what appears to be a very limited amount of money between $700 million and $750 million. Now, that amount obviously will be reduced by attorney's fees. And the payout ranges that the plan sets are, I think, quite shocking to some of your listeners. The maximum payout, and that means for a patient who was legitimately prescribed OxyContin and died as a result, would be $48,000. For other types of harm, the payout range would be somewhere between $3,500 and approximately $30,000. So we're talking about sums of money that I think many people would agree, don't come close to the financial and emotional devastation that people have experienced.
We're talking to Charlotte Bismuth, former assistant district attorney with New York City's special narcotics prosecutor and author of the book Bad Medicine. We're looking at the bankruptcy plan put forth by Purdue Pharma, which would restructure that company and remove control from the Sackler family. It involves compensation as well for people affected by the opioid epidemic. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Is this a personal issue for you or your family? Do you think companies like Purdue Pharma and their owners should pay a price for their role in marketing addictive painkillers, with deceptive marketing in Purdue Pharma's case? Are you a physician yourself? Were you approached by drug companies with misleading information about opioids? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up our talk with Charlotte Bismuth, former narcotics prosecutor and author of the book Bad Medicine, looking at a bankruptcy plan put forth by the drug company Purdue Pharma as it tries to bring thousands of civil lawsuits over its role in the opioid epidemic to a close. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your comments, with your questions about how this all works. 800-642-1234 is the number. Charlotte, one question I have, and I'm kind of baffled by this with so many different parties in this, the states, the individuals, the tribes, who gets to decide whether they take this deal from Purdue Pharma? Who is the decider?
That is an excellent question. Now, remember that when Purdue Pharma filed for Chapter 11, they came in with a proposed settlement to which 25 states had already agreed in principle. That group of states, the so-called consenting states, represent a major class of creditors, and it's very complicated. I was not a bankruptcy professor. I've had to consult a few in order to understand how it works. The voting happens by class. And if that group of states who continue to express support for the settlement vote in favor, most likely it will go through. That doesn't mean that there is no hope for individuals who want to speak out. If individuals have filed a claim through an attorney, they can ask their attorney about that. If they've filed a claim individually, they certainly will be getting a ballot and they can vote. Contacting the state attorney generals in your own states will make a big difference to let them know that you support them or that you want them to, you know, to fight for a different outcome. But again, it does look like for the moment they have the votes that they need.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Dan is with us in Milwaukee. Dan, hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What'd you want to ask about, Dan?
Yeah, I was just curious if we could ever expect to see any actual jail time with some of these people. You know, I just feel like fines for billionaires don't really amount to anything, you know.
Dan, thanks for the call. You mentioned there were a couple of guilty findings in trials related to this. Charlotte, any jail time involved in that?
That is a good question. And Dan, I agree with you 100%. I actually, the case I worked on sent a physician to prison for selling prescriptions for oxycodone. I find it outrageous that the corporate executives and billionaire owners of the company that started it are not themselves facing serious criminal prosecution. So, Purdue Pharma and one of its subsidiaries a few years ago entered into guilty pleas with the U.S. Department of Justice. The Sackler family members have entered into a civil settlement with the U.S. Department of Justice, but there may still be a federal criminal investigation underway. So we can hope that that bears fruit and that the U.S. Department of Justice pursues that. The Chapter 11 plan technically does not preclude any criminal prosecution. There's no release from criminal liability. Bankruptcy court can't do that. However, practically speaking, will the states go after members of the Sackler family or Purdue Pharma criminally now that they are dependent on the company for its continued operation and profits? That's hard to say and probably unlikely.
Dan, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go now to Mark with us in Two Rivers. Mark, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. You had talked about getting phone calls from physicians who may have been misled by Purdue Pharma. I don't see how any physician can be misled by a company. It's not a secret that opioids are addictive. They're incredibly addictive. And I'm not trying to say that Purdue Pharma is not responsible for what they've done, but I think there are many physicians out there that also need to be held responsible for their continued prescription of these powerful narcotics. And that's all I have to say.
Thanks a lot for the call. So, Charlotte, the balance of blame between a drug company and their representatives versus the doctors actually doing the prescribing.
Well, I'm a big believer in accountability wherever it's necessary. And, again, as a prosecutor for the New York City Office of the Special Narcotics Prosecutor, I put a doctor away for 10 to 20 years for having sold prescriptions for controlled substances and caused the deaths of two of his patients who overdosed. So I really believe in accountability, and I think that's absolutely right. Does it mean, however, that we should have two different lanes of justice for those who have the money to manipulate the system and those who don't? No. And I'm sure your caller would agree with that.
And Mark suggested that everybody knows and knew that opioids were addictive. Was that the message from drug companies at the time?
It was not. The message was that fewer than 1% of patients would become addicted to OxyContin. And even more offensive, the message from Dr. Richard Sackler himself, who is one of the key members of the Sackler family who sat on the board of who was deeply involved in the management of Purdue Pharma, was that the drug was good, but the people who abused it were bad.
Thanks for the call, Mark. We're talking to Charlotte Bismuth, author of the book Bad Medicine, Catching New York's Deadliest Pill Pusher, talking about a settlement offer from Purdue Pharma for their role in deceptively marketing OxyContin, their contribution to the opioid crisis in the country. And Charlotte, this is one company. Do we have other lanes going here involving other companies that made and sold and presumably marketed opioid medications?
We do. And we also have companies that distributed the medications but disregarded red flags about the staggering amounts, staggering numbers of pills that were flowing into certain states. So there are a series of lawsuits that have been filed, including the ones against Purdue. Now, when Purdue went into bankruptcy court, all of the lawsuits against them were frozen. The other lawsuits continue in what's called a multi-district litigation out of the Northern District of Ohio. So they've all been consolidated there. And we're also seeing a couple of lawsuits that are actually moving forward, one in New York and one in California, that's seeking to hold other manufacturers responsible.
So looking ahead, do you think anything has changed in the drug industry now, Charlotte, since all of these lawsuits?
Well, you're testing my cynicism here. A pharmaceutical historian named David Hertzberg wrote a book called White Market Drugs. And he recently wrote a letter to the judge in the bankruptcy case to oppose this proposal of turning Purdue Pharma into a so-called public benefit company, which is what they're proposing. And one of his points was that, just because you have one company whose mission is to serve the public interest rather than make profit doesn't mean that we can expect the rest of the industry to be redeemed or to behave appropriately. So I'm afraid that I'll have to defer to his opinion on that.
Let's bring on another caller now. Lisa is with us in East Troy. Lisa, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say, without OxyContin and oxycodone, I really wouldn't have made it through the pain after a severe ATV accident. And I am not addicted to that drug. I think maybe nowadays we need to put the blame back on the person that has the addictive personality, because if it wasn't Oxy, they'd be addicted to Valium or some other kind of narcotic or food or alcohol or whatever it may be. The point that we keep blaming everybody else for that person's behavior really needs to stop at some point. We all make choices in life.
Lisa, thanks a lot for the call. And, I'd taken opioid medications after surgery and things like that and was okay. But I don't know, personal responsibility here for the end user, Charlotte. What do you think?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that in the case that I prosecuted and in many other of these cases, there are both chronic pain patients who are suffering from severe pain from accidents or illnesses, who have been harmed, as well as patients who suffer from the disease of addiction. Now, I do believe the science, there is a consensus in medicine now that addiction is a disease, that it's not a personal failing. So I will respectfully disagree with you on that point. But I understand what you're saying about accountability. Again, I believe in accountability wherever it lays. It is certainly an element of recovery and something that's important to address. But the fact is that, you know, Purdue Pharma has recognized that it lied about the risks of addiction. And I think that we can see that for what it is and continue to support appropriate treatment for chronic pain patients who really need it and who need these medications while making sure that other people don't get harmed.
We also heard from Juanita and DePere, who called, couldn't stay on the line. Juanita said, I recently had to take OxyContin. I didn't even take the full dose, and I could feel an addiction forming. I don't drink or smoke. It's not the people. It's the drugs. So as we look forward, Charlotte, in just our last 30 seconds, what are you watching for now in this settlement?
I am watching to see whether there will be any more transparency about the deal and the immunity that the Sacklers hope to get. And I really hope that our elected officials, our senators and congressmen, congresswomen will stand up and demand an explanation as to how Purdue Pharma has managed to escape accountability, and especially members of the Sackler family.
Charlotte, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Charlotte Bismuth is a former assistant district attorney with the New York City Office of the Special Narcotics Prosecutor and author of the book Bad Medicine, Catching New York's Deadliest Pill Pusher. She talked with us about Purdue Pharma's proposed bankruptcy plan and what it means for the company and for victims of the opioid epidemic.